Welcome to the second edition of Cult Conversations. I am your host, Dan Lashley, and with me is my wife, my wonderful wife, Erin.
How are y'all doing?
And today we're going to talk about something that we've discussed between ourselves for a while, so this may be a multi-part episode here. The Expendables. It's a series where pretty much every action star has been put in there, and you know, you got Stallone, Van Damme, Jet Li, I'm sure Gallagher and Weird Al and pretty much everybody else. I don't know who else is in it. I've never seen one of them, but we've always discussed about our love of the B action movie, the one that's slightly above, you know, slightly below. Sorry, stuff like Rambo and stuff like that, the Deadly Preys or the Raging Cajuns and such. And so we called them the Dependables. And so this episode, and probably the next one, and probably the next couple of episodes, is going to talk about who me and Erin would put in a movie with B action stars. I think that it's something that's fascinating to me, and hopefully it'll be fascinating to you as well.
It's a mad, mad, bad, bad movie. An ensemble piece with all the B movie superstars of the 80s and 90s.
Well, exactly. We're going to start. For this episode, we picked six names. We're going to pick 12 names overall for our Dependables. Your mileage may vary, and if you have your own idea of who you would want to see as a Dependable, please feel free to send it to me at my Twitter handle at www.ofcultfilms. I want to read it. Anyways, we're going to start off. We're going to start off with Erin and one that we both like. I'm going to let you talk about this.
Are we going to talk about David Heavener?
We can talk about David Heavener. Let's go with that.
Well, who did you want me to start with?
That'll work.
Okay. David Heavener is a special type of B-movie actor in that he is an auteur. He directs, he writes, he sings, he acts, and now he has an acting school.
He does.
He started out as a country singer. He had a single in the early 80s. And then by the late 80s, he was making these very particular films starring himself. He would play a guy who was sort of fighting against gangs or
the establishment, maybe sometimes.
Well, yeah, I guess in the Twisted Justice, he was fighting against the establishment. He was a rogue cop.
He was a rebel. He was never ever any good. That's what I think.
Is that that's a song lyric and an opinion.
Yes, exactly. Okay. All rolled into one.
He did Outlaw Force with somebody that we've mentioned in the past, Paul Smith, and Frank Stallone was
Who I look like. I look like Paul Smith a little bit. I do.
Stallone was the by-the-book cop, and Paul Smith was the kick-people-in-the-balls cop. And David Heavener was a country singer whose daughter got stolen by some sociopathic drug addicts who killed his wife. So yes, he had to go to the wastelands of L.A. and fight these guys and their awful graffiti habits.
It's a wonderfully bad movie, and I recommend that everybody watch it. I like David Heavener, because mainly because he's from Kentucky, like myself, so it's kind of like a bond there. But
the only reason I like him is because he's kind of hot. I mean, that helps. He's an attractive man.
I guess, yeah.
It doesn't hurt. I like those guys from Kentucky.
I can't blame you there.
But David Heavener, he's an auteur. He's got this whole series of films where he plays a Vietnam veteran who's forced to fight somebody, or, you know, he's going against the establishment, or he's a post-apocalyptic Amish guy. And he takes a lot of flack, you know, from the internet and people who don't enjoy the bad film idiom to the point where he... But, I mean, he's got a big ego. Obviously, you have to be an actor, director, singer, writer.
Well, that's true.
But he's got a website called IHateDavidHeadner.com.
He's got a sense of humor.
He's
so you
crying
can't.
All the way to the bank.
Exactly. I don't know which bank, but I'm sure he's probably making a deposit or two, filling out the slip and everything. So, good for him. I agree. Yeah, he's been in a lot of fun bad movies. Some of the more recent stuff that he's done, I've not been a fan of. Rock and Roll Cops was a horrible movie, but I don't blame him for that. I kind of blame Donald Jackson and Sam Shaw for that.
Scott Shaw,
yeah, Sam Shaw. I don't care. I don't even care enough to give him the correct name. He's awful. It's just the whole Zen filmmaking is bullshit. You know, it's just people too stupid to come up with a script. Anyways, you know, he's still out there. David Hebner's still out there making movies, and I can appreciate him, and I enjoy most of his work. So I agree. I think he should be a dependable.
Definitely.
Tonight I'm gonna spend my whole paycheck on this fallen angel hanging round my neck. She may be loose, but Lord, her jeans are tight, and this honk is gonna honk and talk tonight. My neck is red, my socks are white, my blue jeans are blue. I love apple pie, the grand old flag, and my mama too. It's Friday night, and Lord, I feel all right, 'cause this honk is gonna honk and talk tonight.
All right, and we're gonna go with the next one here. We're just zapping through these people. This is one that I picked. This one is my favorite of one. It's called the Blaxploitation films. I love Blaxploitation films. Just this really gritty, low-budget kind of thing that acting well is really not a necessity. My pick for the Dependables would be Fred the Hammer Williamson. He was the star of my favorite blaxploitation film, which is Black Caesar. And it's just a wonderfully bad film. But he is there. He is the man. And he doesn't take any shit. And I got to respect that. He's, in the 80s, a lot of his work came from Italy. He went over to Italy and worked a lot of stuff. He did a movie called New Gladiators, which I have the DVD of, but I haven't watched yet. And it was directed by Lucio Fulci. And it's it predates, by a couple of years, the movie The Running Man. It's a very similar kind of theme. But I haven't watched it yet. I want to see it. And he's also responsible for the Black Cobra series, which also was filmed over in Italy. There was three of those, and I think there's rumored to be a fourth one coming up here pretty soon. I hope to see that. But I want to see those. I haven't seen those yet. I have them. Like I said, I have a lot of movies that I haven't seen. I've got like hundreds of movies that I've not yet seen, and I really should. There's no excuse for that. But, Aaron, what are your thoughts about Fred the Hammer there?
Well, mostly when I think of Fred the Hammer, I think of Black Caesar and the wonderful costumes and the way that the character would trick people, manipulate his way upper into trying to get to legitimacy.
Right.
But definitely a lot of scheming, a lot of ins and outs. And that soundtrack by James Brown.
That is Freddy's Dead. That's a pretty good
song.
No,
Mama's Dead.
Mama's Dead?
Yeah. Was Freddy's Dead in that
No, that
movie
was in
too?
Superfly. That was Superfly.
Oh, okay.
Mama's Dead. That was...
Mama's Dead.
Yeah, that was...
Never again will she hold my hand.
She's quite a singer, isn't she?
But we can't forget that Fred the Hammer Williamson appeared in a wonderful movie with Tiny Lister and... who's Richard Roundtree?
Richard Roundtree, Shaft.
Vegas Vampires.
Oh, God, Vegas Vampires.
That's the other one that I think of, because I think that Fred and Richard, they played a pair of buddies. They seemed to be sort of making it up as they were buddy detectives.
Right, they were obviously having
such a great time doing this later career vampire movie. It was really fun.
It was a fun movie. It was an awful one, but it was a fun movie.
They were just, like, their personalities really came out. It seemed, it may not have been improvised, but it felt that way. And they were really badass.
They're always badass. He was badass in From Dusk Till Dawn as well. That's another one of my favorites there.
He was pretty creepy when he vamped out in that movie.
He was pretty creepy when he vamped out, especially when they cut to the shot of him being a vampire and all the bats are, like, coming in because everybody's coming in. And
he's got,
like,
the crazy eyes.
These people are all...
he wants to.
They're all fucked. Fuck you, George Clooney. You're going to get eaten. Motherfucker.
Only he didn't. Spoiler alert.
Well... in my version, he did.
Okay, okay.
Even though he's from Kentucky as well. But sorry, George. All right, anyways, we're going to go with our next selection here. And we're going to pick...
I'm going to do Sandahl Bergman next.
Sandahl Bergman? Okay, mm-hmm. We'll go with that. We'll go with our one of our female dependables here. I'll let Aaron talk a little bit about her here.
Sandahl Bergman, just a classic in the B-movie... sword and sorcery, post-apocalyptic, combining the two. Not only that, she was a dancer. She was in All That Jazz. She was one of the muses in
Did she kill anybody
Xanadu.
In All That Jazz?
Well, I mean, she probably contributed to Roy Scheider's death. But she killed 8 people in Conan the Barbarian with a sword, and she did all of her own stunts. Mostly because they couldn't find a stunt woman who was as tall as she was.
She is a tall gal.
Very athletic, the dancing, the skating, the sword play, and very beautiful. And she carried the movie She.
Yes, which was pretty much like a similar... It was a post-apocalyptic movie, but it was really like it was the same... Valeria, is that where her name in Conan was?
Yeah, Valeria.
It was like she had her own movie. So it was pretty much like that, I think.
And talk a little bit about Hell Comes to Frogtown, because you remember that one better
than
I do.
Well, that's the first one that I remember seeing her in, because I watched that on, I believe it was USA Up All Night. It could have been something else, I'm not sure. But I'm pretty sure it was on USA Up All Night. Hell Comes to Frogtown, one of my favorite movies. Donald Jackson directed it, but I really don't think he did because this thing was actually competent. And it stars Roddy Piper as Sam Hell, who is like one of the last men on Earth, and they need him to repopulate the world. And she's like his handler, like one of the government employees or whatever. She has nice boobs, by the way. I just have to say that. But
when women run the government, everybody's going to have nice boobs.
Well, that's good. That's good. I can support that kind of government,
including Donald Rumsfeld.
Well, if you can rock a push-up bra, I can go along with that. And that's what I remember her from. I watched that before I even watched Conan, which I love because I'm a big fan of the sword and sorcery movies. I'm also a big fan of apocalyptic movies. Not a big fan of the Hercules movies, though, because those kind of come off as a little homoerotic, if you know what I mean. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but seeing Steve Reeves without his shirt on, you know, being all oiled up, just kind of doesn't really do anything for me.
They didn't make them for you.
I guess they didn't.
But she also appeared in a movie that I enjoy from the AIP catalog that was called Raw Nerve that starred Ted Pryor and Tracy Lords, who was playing Ted Pryor's very innocent, virginal little sister who he was trying to protect. And Sandahl Bergman plays a tough reporter who's trying to find out who the killer is, but doesn't figure out that it's Ted Pryor. And the lone biker of the apocalypse is in that movie and drives a truck off of a parking deck.
Randall Tex Cobb.
Yes. That's the main thing that I remember from that movie is the special effect with the truck. But Sandahl Bergman was good.
We have the movie. I just don't remember ever seeing it.
Oh, gosh. It's good. You gotta love those AIP movies.
I do. And we're gonna talk a little bit more about those now, because my next choice is going to be somebody that I think deserves the recognition. Doesn't get the recognition that he deserves for carrying pretty much an entire video label on his back. And I'm talking about Ted Pryor. Now, Ted is most likely known for the movie Deadly Prey, which is a really ridiculous, over-the-top, kind of a Most Dangerous Game kind of thing. It's really just over-the-top and ridiculous. And they just had a sequel to it that came out called The Deadliest Prey in 2013. We watched that recently, and I really, really liked it. I thought it was good. I actually thought it was better than the first one.
Ted Pryor takes out the trash.
He does. And he was in one of the first first movies made on videotape, which was called Sledgehammer, which was a horror movie. I think it may have been maybe like the second or third movie that was made directly from videotape. At the boarding house. He was part of a group called AIP, Action International Pictures, not the Roger Corman thing. His brother, David Pryor, directed most of these movies, and he was part owner of AIP. So Ted was in a ton of these movies, and that's including Future Zone, which was a sequel to the movie, I think Future Force, starring David Carradine. He was in that, and he was also in a movie called Final Sanction, which was like a U.S. versus Russia kind of thing, and the guy that played the Russian was my all-time favorite actor, Robert Zadar, who is, I think he's the greatest guy ever. And that's it's a great movie. I like it. And I think Ted, just based on his insane role in Deadly Prey, who also plays a Vietnam vet, might add. These people that are way too young playing Vietnam vets, they would have been like 15 at the time. But I think he deserves to be a dependable. That is my thought.
We can't forget that Ted Pryor was in Aerobicide, aka Deadly Workout.
Oh, well, I can, but since you brought it up, I guess we did.
The killer uses a safety pin, which is another instance of somebody ripping off Lucio Fulci.
Everybody rips off Lucio Fulci.
Because there was a safety pin in, what was that, Murder Rock.
Yes. Everybody rips off Lucio Fulci. I did myself, making breakfast this morning when I blasted a hole through somebody's face. So that was just for, like, English muffins. All right, well, now we're going to go with the next person here on our dependables list. And this is somebody that Aaron knows a whole lot more about than I do, so we're going to go with her.
Well, I don't know that much about him. His name is Urbano Barberini. This is kind of a risky pick, but this guy was Italian, or is Italian, but tried really hard to break into the American action market. And he had the looks, and I think he had the talent. But unfortunately, what he chose to break into the vehicle was the Gore series, better known as the second movie being Outlaws, which was featured on MST3K. Where they say Cabot a lot. Cabot, 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 because that was Urbano Barberini's character.
Yeah.
And he's known for wielding a sword and wearing tattered shirts. But he happens to...
I like to be known for that.
For exploding shirts.
Exploding shirts and wielding a sword.
He happens... Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. Go ahead. That would be ridiculous.
Well, what I really remember him for is one of the greatest action sequences ever to appear in a horror movie, and this was the Italian horror classic that was also pushed onto the American market, Demons.
Oh, I love Demons. You know I do.
You gotta love Demons.
Yes.
And one of the climactic scenes in the film, Urbano Barberini takes the display motorcycle and the demon sword, and he rides a motorcycle around and around in the movie theater, cutting up demons with the sword, only to pull himself and his leading lady up out of the theater by a cable that's hanging from a helicopter that just happens to have crashed through the ceiling. So it's a horror movie, it's blood and guts, and it's Tony the Pimp and everything,
yeah,
but
Rude,
it's
yeah.
got this great action sequence right in the middle of a film, and he just kills it. And I wish that he had come into the American market and had become a household name, because Lord knows there wasn't a lot better competition in the 90s direct-to-video market.
That's
there
true.
Was a lot of it, but it wasn't necessarily better.
And I have to mention the great American heavy metal soundtrack that was playing, like Motley Crue and Billy Idol and stuff like that was playing in Demons, even though that's not an action movie.
They really should have made more of those movies aimed at America, but I think that Demons wasn't the theatrical hit that they would have liked it to have been. Definitely a cult hit, for those in the know.
Yeah, exactly. And you should know about it. You should watch the movie, because if not, I'm going to come to your house, I'm going to make you watch it, and I'm going to drink up all of your soda. So.
I think anybody that's listening to this has seen Demons, but just in case.
Yes, just in case.
You need to. It's a good movie.
And Bobby Rhodes, it's like awesome. It's Tony the Pimp. Just
yes,
saying.
And Argento's other lesser-known daughter, Fiore, turns into a demon.
Which is good.
He made Blood Fist the most popular kickboxing movie of all time. Now, Blood Fist 2, featuring Maurice Smith, world heavyweight champion, Manny Sampson, martial arts champion, James Waring, world cruiserweight champion, and starring Dom the Dragon Wilson, the highest rated kickboxer of all time. Betrayed by his best friend, the dragon is taken to a secret island for a battle of champions. Don Wilson consistently delivers knockout action, official Karate magazine. Twice the action, twice the adventure, an 11 on the 10 scale, Century Cable Network. Rarely is a sequel more powerful than the original. Blood Fist 2 is a knockout. Inside Karate Magazine. Blood Fist 2, the knockout movie of the 90s.
All right, well, now we're going to go with our last name for today on the list. And this is one that I picked because we recently got into a series that he had done that we enjoyed a lot. And I'm talking about Don the Dragon Wilson. I mean, he is just that one step below Jean-Claude Van Damme. And the series that we're talking about is the Blood Fist series. Now, the first movie, it was just a typical, you know, he goes to Manila. I think it's Manila. He goes to another country to help his brother. He's a retired fighter, and his brother gets killed. And he's got to train and go beat the bad guy. It's kind of a typical thing.
But there's a big twist.
There is a big twist in that. But the second movie is what you need to see, because it is just pure balls-out insanity with all these martial artists put together on this island. It's pretty much a rip-off of
Enter the Dragon.
Enter the Dragon, right.
You could make a Dependables movie just out of the cast of this second Blood Fist movie. And I can't name any of these guys, but you see a lot of the white guy... that guy martial arts
I remember
stars.
One of them being the guy that played the father in No Retreat, No Surrender.
Yes,
he was in that. And it's just an over-the-top movie. Don has been working pretty steadily for years now. He's also been in there was one that was a vampire movie called Night Hunter. I have it. I actually have a couple of copies of it on videotape here. I just haven't seen it yet.
I reviewed that one for my 90s horror
site. What did you say?
For my Friday's, Friday Fangs, vampire movies of the 90s.
What did you think about that?
Well, he's a very good fighter. He's somewhat attractive. He's
I'd do him.
He's not a good actor.
No, yeah. Not at all.
But when they let him fight, you know, that's when he really shines. But one thing I never understand about these movies is the star, the guy who's kicking all the ass, and this is David Heavener, this is Don Wilson, anybody that makes one of these movies, they're always reluctant to fight. And there's always somebody that's trying to make them fight. Like, you can't find 10 guys in any bar on a Tuesday that want to get in a fight. You got to pick the guy that it's like the male version of getting excited about not getting consent.
I could see that.
I guess.
That doesn't make it like, yeah.
They just can't wait to fight this guy because he doesn't want to fight him.
It's like, come on, pussy.
You're going to fight, you're going to get your ass kicked, or we're going to kill you.
Kick your ass, you pussy. Come on, fight. And then, of course, then they get their ass kicked. He was also in another movie, I'm sure that he produced, called Terminal Rush, which was just god-awful.
And Roddy Piper was in that, and he wore these weird...
Yeah, he looked like a raccoon. I don't understand why they made him look like a raccoon. But it was about like a dam, like these terrorists that take over a dam, and the police were corrupt, and police
Don
are always
Wilson
corrupt.
Was a Native American, and his dad was Brett Halsey.
Yeah, that's really believable. But anyways, you know. If you gotta see Don the Dragon Wilson movies, you got to see the Blood Fist series because, it's amazing in the fact that outside of the first couple of them, he's in all of them. There's like 27 of these. I don't
they're
even
all
know.
On Netflix.
And they're all on Netflix. Go watch it. You know, pay the $10, you lazy cheap bastards. But he changes his character every time. It's a different name every time. Maybe I'm just going to say that it's the first guy that he's gone to the witness protection program and they keep having to move him around because...
It's because people want him to fight and he doesn't want to fight.
And he keeps fucking shit up. It's like, well, maybe if he doesn't like try to present himself like a fighter, maybe then like
nothing
people wouldn't want to fight
exemplifies
or maybe...
Exemplifies the...
Nobody wants to fight a farmer, you know? It's like... That guy's got overalls on. I'm not going to fight that guy because he's just buying manure.
Well, they had a tractor chase in Footloose, so somebody wanted to fight a farmer.
Well,
Chuck Cranston's dad had those tractors.
Footloose isn't an action movie.
It has Holding Out for a Hero in it.
Yeah, well, you know, that hero is not Chris Penn. I'm sorry.
Nothing exemplifies the sequel taking things to the nth power more than the Blood Fist series, because the first Blood Fist movie is ridiculous, and then the second Blood Fist movie is just like Chuck E. Cheese on acid ridiculous.
And that's how I went to Chuck E. Cheese as a kid, like at 8 or 9 years old on acid. It was great.
Oh, was it in one of those temporary tattoos?
Yes. I think... one of the animatronics followed me home one night. That's what I think. But, and also, like, in the second Blood Fist movie, just, you have to see at the beginning, like, he sleeps with, like, the ugliest hooker I've ever seen in my life. It was like, why put this woman in the movie? And I think I probably Don Dragon Wilson probably banged it.
Oh.
That's what I'm thinking.
I don't know. I'd hate to be one of the actresses for the casting agency where they find ugly hookers. Because you know they have one. They don't just go get an ugly hooker. They have a specialized casting agency for that.
Yeah, I guess you gotta get headshots made.
I'm an actress.
Get headshots made, like in an ugly tank top and like spandex jeans or something. I don't know. Well, that's gonna do it for our... first part of our Expendables. Next time we're going to do... Dependables. I'm sorry, Dependables. Yes, I've had a few drinks. Next time we're going to have part two of our Dependables where we're going to do our other six selections. And I think you're going to be surprised by a few of them. But I think you're going to like it. You're going to enjoy it. And if you have your own ideas of what you think should be a Dependable, feel free to send it to my Twitter at www.ofcultfilm. That's on my Twitter. Feel free to do it. Just, you know, don't send me nudes because I get enough of those already.
If you think that we're wrong on the internet, then we really don't care. So don't send us that.
No, we really don't. But thank you for listening. And for Aaron Lashley, I am Dan Lashley. And hope you have a good evening. Thank you.
Light by light, blow after blow.